Well, good morning, you guys. Here I am again. So I talked earlier when we were worshiping together about being on sabbatical. We went away, Amy and I went away with the kids. We took the kids with us. Not just Amy and I, although in retrospect. No, let's not. We rented an RV is what we did. We rented this RV. It's a motorhome, right? We found someone online and we rented their motorhome and we drove it through most of the western United States, and it was a 30-foot motorhome, and we had a blast. We saw some amazing things, did some amazing things. It was kind of a dream that we'd had for a while to just take this trip, but the motorhome itself was a little bit of an experience. We rented it sight unseen, and it was a bit older than I was expecting when we got it, but it was like, here we are, our bags are packed, let's go, and it was like, we got to Watsonville before the first problem started, I recognized it's an older RV, like, we left the iPod at home, but I got a stack of CDs, because I was born in 1977, so I have piles of CDs, I stick a CD in, by Watsonville, I was like, let's hear some music, I put it, and it says, error, that's... Okay, here, off we go, and we got to Oregon before we figured out that the refrigerator, which we'd loaded with all of our food, all of our groceries, really only worked as a freezer. So the next morning I found that my half gallon of milk was actually a block of ice, and we promptly threw all our groceries away. And so it's just like, it was kind of one thing after another, and pretty soon, I had gathered this little kit. It's like every problem that arose, I opened this kit and I had a screwdriver and pliers and duct tape, and I kid you not, baling wire. It's like as it went on, it was like every problem that arose, I fixed it, And the problems were, there were problems, but it kind of boosted my confidence. So like everything that arose, I just went in there and like a man, I just fixed it, with duct tape. And, at one point, the compartments on the outside where you store your stuff, the locks had broken off. And so we were driving we were driving out in the middle of nowhere in Idaho, and I look in the rearview mirror, and it looked like we were about to take off, these wings, that is flapping. So we pulled over and I duct taped them closed, and I was like, problem solved, A tire blew out, and I got that fixed, and then the exhaust pipe fell off. And so on a Sunday afternoon in Salt Lake City, there's not much open, let me tell you that. So I bought some aluminum tubing and some baling wire, and I made a new exhaust, like a man. And I just, by the time we were about, 2.5 weeks into this, our vehicle would have looked appropriate in that opening sequence from Mad Max, where they're just like this post-apocalyptic, I just needed a spiked helmet and flames shoot out. Anyway. We're almost done with our trip. We were about 3 or 4 days away from kind of finishing, and we'd stopped at this place, Bryce Canyon, which I highly recommend, by the way, if you've never been there. That is God's creation on display. It was amazing. But it was about 10:30 at night, and one of our family members, who shall remain nameless to protect the innocent, she called to me from the bathroom. I heard this voice. Oh, well, I gave it away. And she said, Dad, the toilet's broken. Oh, and she'd been in there a while. So I was like, well, come on out. I went in, and I'm not going to sugarcoat it. There's a deuce in there. And, the way the toilet works is there's two pedals, right? And one you push fills the tank full of water, okay? I don't want to get too far in the mechanics of it, but I need you to understand the story, right? So the second pedal opens a slot, and everything, empties into the tank down below. It's not emptying. So I look down below, and so there's this metal cable that creates tension on the pedals, and that's what causes the trap door to open. Well, the metal cable had snapped off and retracted up into the toilet. So I got my little toolkit, and this isn't going to get fixed with duct tape, so I'm down in there with pliers. I'm trying to pull this metal cable out, and I'm pulling plastic pieces off, and I'm reaching up, and the whole time I'm in this space that's it's about yay big. You ever see a mime do their thing like this? That's about what it was. I'm in this space and I'm just, it's 11 o'clock at night. I'm exhausted. I'm drenched in sweat. you know, and finally I go, I got to empty this thing. So I'm scooping it out and putting it into a Denny's bag, you know? And I realized like, I got nothing. I got no man skills for this, you know, like, and Amy peeks in, she goes, how's it going? I said, I can't fix this. I can't fix this one. I can't. She goes, well, let's go home. So the next morning, you know, we packed up and drove all the way home and in one straight shot. And but it was a great trip. We had a great time and really refreshed. But anyway, on this trip, I knew we were going to be talking about Proverbs. So we're in this series called Nuggets. No relation to my story, by the way. That's coincidental. We're in this series called Nuggets, where we're talking about wisdom from the Proverbs, right? And I love Proverbs. When I was growing up, my mom read to me from Proverbs every day. Myself and my two brothers, she would read to us over breakfast, a proverb a day. And if you read Proverbs, if you read them starting chapter 1 and all the way through the end, and you read one a day, it's about a monthly cycle, and you can start over again. And she would. We'd read through it all the way, and we'd start over at the beginning. And we read it over and over and over, and you begin to see kind of the arc of what Solomon's kind of curated poetic proverbs were beginning to say as a collective, not just as little individual pieces of wisdom. And I mean, to this day, I still associate pancakes with Proverbs, you know, eating pancake, that's good, Mom, you know. And so I wanted to kind of dig into Proverbs chapter 1. So if you have, there's blue Bibles throughout. If you want, you can turn to Proverbs chapter 1. I'm just going to read you the first 7 verses, okay? The first 7 verses of Proverbs chapter 1. All right, we'll also have them on the screen if you like to read along up there. All right, this is Proverbs chapter 1. And this is where Solomon tells us what he's about to tell us, right? This is kind of his introduction. The Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. Okay, verse 2, he says, for gaining wisdom and instruction. See, he's telling you already what they're for. These are what the Proverbs are for. For gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young, let the wise listen and add to their counsel. So see, he's saying there that it's all inclusive. If you're brand new, there's something here for you. But if you're wise, then listen up, and if you're discerning, you'll hear something for you as well, right? Let the discerning get guidance. I could use a little guidance. Could you use some guidance in your life? I certainly could. For understanding proverbs and parables, the sayings and riddles of the wise. And he culminates this group of thoughts, this introduction, with this statement here. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction, right? So that's the first 7 verses. There's some other verses following that. I'm not going to read through them right now. You can look at them in your own time if you like. But the verse 8 through 19, he shares with us kind of the voice of what I call chaos. He does this throughout the Proverbs, where he'll share from a voice, from a standpoint of, he calls it foolishness, right? In fact, let's make some notes here. Okay. Is that a good spot? Can you all see that? All right. So he kind of divides his thoughts into kind of 2 categories. He has I said verse 8 through 19, right? He speaks from a voice of kind of what he calls foolishness, all right? You'll see this theme throughout Proverbs. As we're in this series, other people will teach from other Proverbs. You'll probably hear this a lot. The foolish man, da 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 da, right? So he speaks from this voice of foolishness to describe this one side, right? And then on the other side, he uses this word wisdom. Okay. In fact, Proverbs is written in such a way that it leads us to believe that a lot of these proverbs he was writing directly to his own son, to his flesh and blood. In fact, he'll say sometimes he'll say, "Son, when you do this," right? And he describes wisdom as this almost this character. He uses this kind of metaphor, this beautiful woman. He wants to make wisdom enticing to his son, right? He wants to make it an attractive proposition, right? So over here you have wisdom, and then you have foolishness, okay? But if you pull back a little bit, you could describe what he's describing as order versus chaos, okay? And as you go through the Proverbs, you'll see that everything begins to kind of fall into place into these two categories. And these are not just two separate thoughts. They're two systems at war with one another. And he's giving you the framework for what that looks like, okay? In fact, I'm going to write up here these are the Hebrew words. This is going to be important later. I'm just going to write it right now. The Hebrew word he uses there is chokmah. You're dying to say it. Go ahead. Chokmah. Yeah, there you go. Right? And then for foolishness, he uses this Hebrew word, evelim, right? Coincidentally, it looks a lot like the English word for evil, right? So these are these two opposing forces that he lays out for us. And quickly what becomes apparent is that Proverbs and the wisdom that's found there is not just folksy, wise sayings that we can all kind of agree with and take to heart, right? This isn't just kind of folksy wisdom, kind of like fortune cookie kind of stuff, you know, like, oh, you should plant your crops early or what have you. This is a transcendent wisdom. Now, at first glance, some of these things are very practical, but they're not limited to the practical. They actually transcend the practical. Does that make sense? And we know this because of the story in the Bible about Solomon, right? Joe talked about it last week, if you're here. Remember that God gave him, he came to him and he said, you know, I find you pleasing and you're seeking me. I would give you a gift. Ask anything of me. And what did he ask for? Wisdom, right? Solomon asked for wisdom. So the wisdom that God that Solomon shares from us, we know, is a direct pipeline to God. This is transcendent wisdom, not just words to live by, right? Well, they are words to live by, but you know what I'm saying. All right, so, but the question becomes, what exactly is so good about this transcendent wisdom? Why do I need this, right? I mean, I feel pretty capable on my own. I'm employed, and I'm a husband and a father, and I drive a 1997 Nissan Pathfinder. I feel like I've arrived in life. You know, I have the things that I need. Like, what do I need this for, right? So let's answer that question. I jotted down three thoughts, and feel free to jot these down as well. I like when someone's teaching. I like to make little notes so that I remember, and you can do that as well, or you can just file them away in the steel trap up here if you want. So this is what is so good about wisdom, right? So let's answer that question. First, wise choices build a barrier between us and the power and influence of sin. Wise choices build a barrier between us and the power and influence of sin. You know, I really like videos of, like, YouTube videos of sea waves crashing into seawalls. You know, there's this whole genre. I mean, there's places around the world where they've built up towns that exist below sea level or at sea level, and so they build these sea walls, right? And it takes a lot of work to build these walls. I mean, it's a lot of effort. And they're not built up in a day. It's a lot of material that goes into them. But they're also not just broken down in a day, right? I mean, if they do break down and they fail, and those are the best, you know, when you see the waves come crashing in, it's really cool. Not for the people there, you understand, but for us watching, it's not cool. It's just interesting is what I'm trying to say. It's just interesting to watch. That didn't happen overnight, right? They begin to erode and break down, right? Wise choices, when we make wise choices, they begin to build a barrier between us and the power and the influence of sin. Now, let's put some words in these categories, right? Sin, very small word and sometimes difficult to understand. It just means making foolish choices, making choices that don't align with God's order and his wisdom, right? And sin brings about chaos, corruption, right? It's another word for it, corruption. Okay? But wisdom protects us from the power and influence of that corruption, right? In fact, in Proverbs chapter 2, Solomon says, "For the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds success in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless." You hear that? He's a shield for those who make good choices. And the power to make good choices, by the way, this is a side thought. This is for free. This is not in my notes. But the power to make good choices comes from outside of us, not from within us. right? We choose, I sang in that song that Amy and I wrote, we choose to believe and he chooses to save, right? So that power to make good choices, I'm not saying go out there and do better, try harder. That's not my message here, right? As we embrace God's wisdom, he enables us to make better and better choices. And it creates this bulwark between us and the power and influence of sin, right? He protects us using his wisdom. For he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. But then here's the thing. There's a cost. Remember how I said you can't just build up a barrier like this in one day, right? You don't get up in the morning and go, from now on, I'm going to make wise choices, and everything is just fixed and ordered in your life, right? It doesn't happen overnight. There's a cost. In fact, Christianity, or let's say it like this, being a follower of Jesus, which I consider myself to be a follower of Jesus, a friend of Jesus, I follow Jesus and his teachings. To follow him, it is a radical infringement on the natural urges and desires that I have, right? I mean, just think about it. If you got up in the morning and you did everything you felt like doing when you felt like doing it, and you did nothing that you didn't feel like doing, just think of the chaos that would become your life, right? To follow Jesus, to put your life in line with the teachings of Jesus is a radical infringement upon that. And B, if you're writing these down, B is wisdom is how God prepares us for that transformative experience. You know, when we were on our road trip, we went to Yellowstone. And let me tell you, Yellowstone is everything that everybody says it is. It was amazing. I was blown away. I was so happy that we made the journey. It was a long trip, but it was, I mean, we saw bison and elk and we saw the biggest coyote I've ever seen in my life and just all kinds of things. And I even did a little fishing, but it was illegal and I got caught. Anyway, I'll tell you that story another time, but I didn't know it was illegal until I was told by someone with a badge and a gun. But I had this fabulous time in Yellowstone. Well, so there's this moment where we're driving down the road, and this happens a lot in Yellowstone, I guess. You're driving, and you'll see a group of people on the side of the road, and you stop because it's like, what are they looking at, right? You want to see what they're seeing. So we pull over, and we look, and looking up in the trees, and then all of a sudden, into this clearing, maybe 1,000 feet away, comes this grizzly bear and her two cubs, right? Now, I've been outside a lot in my life. I've done a lot of camping and backpacking, all these things. I've seen a lot of animals. I've seen a lot of really cool things. I've never seen a grizzly bear in real life in the wild, right? It transformed me, I'll tell you, because I immediately, as I see this thing kind of rear up, and you see the power and the pure, unadulterated killing machine that this thing is. I mean, it was designed for death, you know? That's a little strong. It was powerful, and like, it inspired awe in me. And I flashed back, you know how they say your life flashes before your eyes, you know? And I thought back to all the times I'd seen bear sign. Like, I remember this one time when I was backpacking with my dad a few years ago in the mountains, and I went to get water at night from this little stream, and then we climbed into our tent. In the morning, I thought, oh, we should load up on water before we head out. So I went back to the same stream 8 hours later, and there, you know, in the morning, early in the morning, and there's two fresh paw prints in the mud. I mean, fresh because they're still filling with water. There's a big pile of bear scat, you know, and I'm looking and I go, wow, that's so cool. There's a giant bear that was just here. And I thought, that's really cool. I don't think it's cool anymore. Like, you know, like, I was in danger and I didn't know it, right? Sometimes being faced with inspiration and these wisdom-causing moments prepare you for transformation, right? They begin to change the way you think about things. They make you wiser, right? In fact, in Romans chapter 12, I'm sure you've heard this verse before. It's a classic. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you'll be able to test and prove what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Well, you know what his will for your life is? You know what it is? I'll tell you. It's to transform you, to make you more like him. That's his will for your life, right? All right, so three. Wait, am I doing numbers or letters? Three? A, C? Okay, C, three. wisdom brings us closer to the dignity and glory that God intended in making us a reflection of himself. I recognize it's a really long run-on sentence, and it kind of got away from me, but all of those words I needed to include in that thought. So wisdom brings us closer to the dignity and glory that God intended in making us a reflection of himself. You know, God, he made us, in fact, he tells us in Genesis, we're made in his image, right? We're a reflection of him. You know, if I went into my kid's bedroom and I found a full-size, life-size poster on the wall of me, you know, and they're throwing darts at it, you know, trying to get them right in my face, and that would hurt my feelings, you know? I'd say, oh, gosh, guys, why are you doing that? You know, and they might say, oh, it's not you, Dad. We're not throwing darts at you. It's just this poster, right? Yeah, but that's my image, you know? I mean, it's a part of me, you know? And there's a dignity that God intended for us, right? There's a dignity that he intended for us, but we've fallen short of it, and we lose that dignity as we make when we make foolish choices, when we side with chaos, and sin and corruption, we begin to throw that dignity away, right? But through wisdom, through God's wisdom, as we embrace it and make it a part of our life, we recapture. In fact, let's throw that up on the board. We recapture the dignity that God intended for every aspect of our life, for our dealings in business and relationships and our sexuality and our communication and our parenting. There's dignity to be found there. There's a cool verse that talks about that in 1 Peter chapter 4. He says, if anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised, it says in the NIV, and the New King James, it says glorified. In all things God be glorified through Jesus Christ. To him be the glory and the power. In the New King James, it says dominion. I think that's a more accurate translation, that word dominion, forever and ever. There's a, you know, he's talking about being glorified through Jesus. Be glorified through yourself? Well, he's, you know, when he says Jesus Christ there, I mean, it's in the context of Peter talking about the body of Christ, right? The collective, not that we're Jesus, but Jesus is the head and we're his body, right? That's part of the transformation. We're becoming the church, right? The body of Christ. And that word dominion harkens back to Genesis when he said, I'll give you dominion over the earth, right? It's about recapturing the dignity that God intended for us. Amen? All right. That was good. You can say amen. That was good. All right. All right. So here's the question, though. Where does that wisdom come from? Where does it come from? Well, let's look at Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10. He echoes what we just read in Proverbs 1, but I like this version of it better. He says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. So fear, wisdom, right? But what does it mean? What does it mean to fear God? What does that mean to fear God? Can I be honest with you? I have, for most of my Christian life, wrestled with the idea of fearing God, right? I love God, and I know that he loves me. Why in this loving relationship is fear a component? I haven't always understood that. When I was in, when I was really young, my family was, we were part of a Catholic community. We would go to Mass in the morning and then this like charismatic Catholic group in the evening. It was until I was about 12. It was very kind of a schizophrenic time in my spirituality. But anyway, there was a lot of good things came out of it too. But I was in this Catholic school in grade school, and we had these aged nuns were the teachers. There was one nun, her name was Sister Lupe, and she, very strict and very intense woman. You know, she's probably about 2.5 feet tall. Still very intimidating. She had these like gnarled old knuckled hands. And she carried a ruler with her, you know. And I asked her one time, I remember in the class, the subject came up, the fear of God. And I said, well, I don't understand fear God. We, you know, I think he, you know, doesn't he love us? Why would we fear him, you know? And she said, imagine a loaded gun and I place it on your desk in front of you. Wouldn't you be afraid of it? What a terrible illustration that was. I mean, so for some time of my childhood, I thought, well, I guess God is a loaded gun, and then later I heard, we crossed over into you know, a Protestant church in Watsonville we're going to for a time. And I remember a speaker addressing this, and I thought, oh, here we go. Okay, I'm gonna hear the straight scoop here. And he said, well, fear, it means like, you know, kind of like respect. It's just respect. It's another word for respect. I thought, well, that's, you know, I respect my parents, but I'm not afraid of them, you know? So that didn't work for me either. So, you know, when you hear a scripture and it doesn't connect to you, it doesn't fit, you kind of put it on a shelf for a little while. You know, I kind of put it on a shelf for a while, and I came back to it later. And what I found is that as I got older and more, you know, learned more about the Bible, I began to look at where do words come from, what do words mean, and, you know, in the original languages, Hebrew and Greek and that kind of thing. And let me tell you where this comes from. So he says the fear, okay, fear is a word called yirat. Yirat, right? The fear of the Lord. That is a word. We pronounce it as Yahweh, right? In Hebrew, it's Yahweh. Sounds cool, I think, in Hebrew. And so fear of the Lord is the beginning. And this word is Rashit, right? Don't take a picture of that and put it on Instagram. Danny will think I'm talking about something else entirely. All right. So Yirat, Yahweh, Rashit, Chokmah, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning, right? And there's an Easter egg here for us as you look at this original language that Solomon intended for us to see. Because if this sounds familiar to you now, it should. This is the very first line of Genesis. Rashit, in the beginning, Yahweh, right? In the beginning, Yahweh. So he's pointing us back to the beginning. But what's at the beginning, right? So if you're taking notes again, I have 3 points for you. What does it mean to fear God? The first one is, it's about place. It's about place. It's about starting with right thinking, okay? So we have to go back to the beginning. You know, Galileo in the 16th century was a frustrated astronomer because, you know, when he looked at the stars, he found that common mathematics of the time didn't add up. And the reason they didn't add up, excuse me, is because he was starting with a thought process called heliocentrism, which is the idea that the sun revolves around the earth, right? It sounds silly now, right? But everybody thought that was true in the 16th century. The sun revolves around the earth, right? But then as he began to study and explore, he found that the real truth is that the earth revolves around the sun, right? The earth revolves around the sun. So when you start from an inaccurate place, you're never going to get to a healthy place in your thinking, right? But when you go back to the beginning and you realign your thinking with truth, there's a whole world of wisdom to discover, right? So our understanding, let's do this real quick. I want to do this little exercise. Just imagine for a second, just set aside everything that you know and have ever been told about there being a God. Imagine you're a human being walking the earth and you've never even heard of the concept of God before, right? You're just walking around, you're doing your thing, and someone introduces the concept of God for the first time. And I introduce it like this. Did you know that there is a being, an all-powerful being, and he inhabits all of the unoccupied space of the universe, 14.5 billion light years in all directions. He fills it all. And before the universe was, at the dawn of time, before that, he was there. Not only was he there, he spun this all into existence. He created everything. Everything that you see, everything that you've heard, he made it. And furthermore, his attention is on you right now. Is that a terrifying thought? Because you don't know yet that he's a loving God, do you? Right? Because we start here when we first hear about God. We start in chaos. But we start with fear, and then when we cross over, we end with love. Right? Yes. So it's about place. It's about finding our place. Right? And second, it's about understanding. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. That's in Psalms. David wrote that. So you thought Solomon created all of his proverbs from scratch? He actually took this one from his father, right? The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. I want to have good understanding, right? You know, when I talk to my children, when I speak to them, when I instruct them, I don't get down and I go, oh, little guy, are you hurt? You know, and talking that baby voice, you know. If that's your parenting style, then I suggest you change. It's kind of silly. Maybe think about changing. I don't want raised babies to be even bigger babies, you know? The only difference is they're eating more food. That's not what we want, right? I want to raise them to be thinking, critical thinking adults someday. So on our trip, there was an incident where my kids had gotten in this tussle. They're not perfect. I know you see them, you probably think they're perfect kids. They're actually not. They have their moments. There was some acts of violence had occurred. Let me just suffice to say that. I'd observed it. So I gathered the three of them and I said, we're going to start with apology. I need you to begin. We're going to go around a circle and we're going to apologize to the person that you've harmed, right? And the first one goes, I'm sorry, you know? I said, that was a terrible apology. And this is what I said. I said, I want to hear sincerity, not meaningless platitudes. Do you understand me? And Andrew, he's my honest one, right? He's always honest. He goes, I said, well, sincerity, son, means honesty. It comes from your heart to be sincere. It's transparent, right? There's no pretense. And a meaningless platitude is an apology that has no meaning. It has no heart, no feeling behind it. You're placating someone out of some ulterior motive, right? So then I said, I want to hear sincerity, not meaningless platitude. Do you understand me? And they said, yeah. And I think they kind of did, you know? And this is what God is calling to us, a deeper wisdom, a transcendent wisdom, right? It's about understanding. And lastly, I want to close with this. Okay, this is, let's look and see what Jesus had to say about it. I think that's always a good rule of thumb when you're talking about a subject from the Bible is end with, what did Jesus have to say about this? He spoke about this very subject. He said this in Luke chapter 12, verse 4 through 6. Luke chapter 12. And actually, we kind of cut it off here because there's actually a line that's important that says, it says, then Jesus said to the people, and it picks up right there, right? Then Jesus said to the people, I tell you, my friends, don't be afraid of people. They can kill the body, but after that, they can do nothing more to hurt you. I will show you the one to fear. You should fear God, who has the power to kill you and also to throw you into hell. Yes, he has the one you should fear. And then he tacks on the seemingly unrelated line, when birds are sold, five small birds cost only 2 pennies, but God does not forget any of them. You know, Jesus, you just told me that God is going to kill me and throw me into hell. I don't really want to hear about the birds and the pennies right now, right? When atheist philosophers talk about what a kind and, you know, thought-provoking philosopher and teacher Jesus was, they tend to gloss over these very gnarly statements about Jesus talking about people being killed and thrown into hell, right? But let's unpack this a little bit, okay? Whenever you read something like this and it seems like that does not line up with the loving God that I know, right? Well, you got to take a step back. First of all, let's ask ourselves, who's he talking to? Who's he speaking to? It says, the line that's missing up there, it says, then Jesus said to the people. Who are the people that he's talking to? Well, he's talking to a group of Jews, right? In Jerusalem. When he's speaking this specifically, he's in Jerusalem. He's speaking to some Jews. They're there, and they've gathered to hear him, right? And he calls them my friends, which I like. He says, I tell you, my friends, don't be afraid of people, right? He says, you should fear God who has the power to kill you and throw you into hell. Well, you know what happened about 45-ish the years after he said this? In 70 AD, right? In 70 AD, the Romans came through and destroyed Jerusalem. They burned the temple to the ground. They took all of the rubble from the temple and they hurled it into this small valley along with all of the bodies so they wouldn't putrefy the city. So they, hundreds, maybe thousands, we don't know, of dead bodies they threw into this little valley. The valley is named Hinnom. Hinnom, okay? The Valley of Hinnom. So when Jesus says here, if you look at the original language, the Greek word, which is translated from Aramaic, for hell, it's an unfortunate translation because it kind of confuses us, right? Hell sounds like, what does that sound like? Something like subterranean torture chamber full of flames, right? That's what you kind of conjure up. That's what I do. But he actually says, kill you and throw you into the Valley of Hinnom. So he's telling these people, this is foreshadowing, right? Jesus is a fantastic storyteller, and good stories always have foreshadowing. He's saying, God is about to change everything you know about relationship with God. That's what I've come to do. And in light of that, he's going to smash the temple, the center of worship up until now, right? And anyone who remains clinging to that old way will be killed and thrown into this valley. And that actually happened. That happened. Of course, Christians who interpreted this the correct way and knew, they fled, historians tell us, they fled out of Jerusalem and were safe from this attack by the Romans, right? Now, let's address this last little line here. Are not five sparrows sold for 2 pennies? So he's saying, birds worth very little, right? Seemingly inconsequential, yet not one of them is forgotten by God. You are not forgotten by God. You are not inconsequential to him. That's his economy, right? You know, one thing we say a lot is, come as you are, but you don't have to stay that way, right? And the way that works is that God has a new beginning for you, and he's carrying around your new beginning in the palm of his hands. In fact, that song that we sang, I had this in mind when we wrote that. You walk with me now. He's been walking with me. He's been walking with you. He's walking alongside you with your new beginning. He has your new beginning right here in his hands. And it seems paradoxical to think that there's a new beginning in front of us, right? Beginnings are behind us, right? Right? It's too late for me, someone might say. It's too late for me. It's not too late. He has your beginning in his hands, and he's waiting for you to stop, turn yourself to him, just ask for it, and he'll give it to you. And your new beginning starts right then, right? And the beginning is, it starts with, God, you are awe-inspiring and awesome in your ways, so beyond anything I could comprehend or know. Fear, right? But it ends in, God, I embrace your wisdom, and I embrace the truth that you love me. You've not forgotten me. Amen?